You have Nighttime Economy, the podcast from 24 Hour Nation. My name is Randall White. Now in its third year, and formerly called 24 Minutes, 24 Hour Nation's podcast helps others see the economic and cultural nuances, challenges, and opportunities in our cities at night. In each episode, we will talk with experts from around the world about trends, news, and best practices. In this Nighttime Economy episode, our guest is Mark Roach, director of the Auckland UNESCO City of Music. You will learn about Auckland, New Zealand, one of the most culturally diverse cities in the world, its USP, or unique selling point, as a music scene, what it means to be a UNESCO City of Music, and the most important thing any nighttime and cultural advocate can do to honor the heritage artists and music of a place. We begin with Mark introducing himself with a traditional Maori pipiha.
Ka tangi te titi, ka tangi te kaka, ka tangi hoki ko, tihe mori ora. Ko Mark Roach toko ingoa, ko matua tamaki makaurau papaoro. That's me saying welcome, that I have a voice, and this voice tells you that my name is Mark Roach, that I'm the director of Auckland City of Music. I came from the UK originally, so I'm an immigrant to New Zealand. I came out when I was a child with my parents and my brother. We live in the west of Auckland, and I have two sons. One is 14, the other is nearly 10. And I identify with my mountain, which is the Waitakere Ranges, which sits behind my house. I identify with the river, which is called the Faux River, which is just down the road from me. And my ocean that I identify with is the Hauraki Gulf, which is the large expanse of sea that leads into the port of Auckland. So that there is my pipiha, and that tells you who I am, where I've come from, and where I live, and the geological features and the land that I identify with.
I think this characteristic of New Zealanders is wonderfully authentic and speaks to a respect. You have also written about the area's first artists, the first musicians, the first storytellers, the first communities, the first creators of culture in New Zealand. And that's a cultural legacy, I would say. It's integral to your work, it seems, as well, and the organization for which you are a director. Now, tell us a little bit about the organization, the Auckland City of Music.
Auckland City of Music Office, the regional music office for Auckland. We've been on this journey for about 6-7 years now. That began some time ago. Initially, what happened was that I had seen Adelaide, a news story about Adelaide in Australia, and they were applying to become a UNESCO City of Music. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of this this designation. Did a bit of research on it and thought that that sounded like something that would suit Auckland. Now, so at the time, and I guess an extent still is, we have an issue with venue closures, with just generally city policy not really being supportive or being able to advance the music ecosystem in Auckland. And so to me, that designation seemed like a really good vehicle for us in order to advance some of those ideas. Now, at the time, I was working for a music rights organization, and we were in partnership with the Performing Rights Organization and some other industry organizations across the board. So I put it to them. I said, look, this is a really good idea. This could actually advance some of what we've been thinking about and maybe, you know, stem this horrible sort of system we were in of venues closing down all the time. So as it turned out, I knew people within the council structure. I approached them. They agreed it was a really good idea, that we basically put a pitch together, put it in front of the governing body, our elected officials and so forth, got that signed off, applied to UNESCO, got the designation. That formed the basis of the City of Music Office. And from there, it's been a sort of constant evolution of working out where we sit within the infrastructure and the ecosystem and how we best develop that and how we can sort of push forward our projects and our plans and ideas. And just recently, we've since turned the office into a charitable trust. So we have a degree of independence from our council. So we don't sit within council at all. And I know, as many of the listeners will know, it works on both ways, I guess. A lot of people who are music officers or nighttime economy managers and so forth, you have the support of council on one hand, but then you're sort of restricted in what you can and can't do, and you don't have that autonomy. And you're trying to strike that balance because you want the buy-in from the music industry and your music community, who are naturally sort of wary of political sort of structures. And then political structures want the buy-in of the musicians, but they don't talk the same language. So it's
Okay, and just because I don't want to assume that everyone listening fully understands about UNESCO and the UN for that matter, that the United Nations, most people are familiar with the United Nations. It's an intergovernmental organization. It sits in New York City. UNESCO is their kind of agency within the UN that focuses on education, scientific, and cultural initiatives. They have a Creative Cities Network. This is like Russian nesting dolls. They have the UNESCO's Creative Cities Network. And then within that is the UNESCO Cities of Music. There are currently 75, I believe, in Australia and New Zealand. There are two designated cities of music. You just referenced Adelaide being one, correct? And then Auckland is the other. I was surprised that in North America there are 10 cities of music, only one of which is in the United States, and that is Kansas City, which
Kansas
has an
City.
interesting history of music as well. So what makes a music city in from your perspective?
Think sort of question, I guess, is, and I love that description that it's a Russian doll situation. It's very much what it feels like. So, for many of the listeners that work within councils and municipalities, UNESCO is best described as your municipality on steroids. You don't know sort of bureaucracy until you've actually dealt with UNESCO. It's multi-layered, and it's a global organization. So, the United Nations is headquartered in New York. However, the UNESCO arm is headquartered in Paris, and the Creative Cities Network is run out of Paris. Very small offices. Only three employees, I think, currently work on that, managing a network of 350 cities in total
Oh
and
my goodness.
75. Yeah, it's massive. So the designations, and it started in 2004. I've long sort of nagged people to reassess the network and see whether it's fit for purpose because, as an organization that is now 20 years old, it probably, behoves them to actually sort of see where they're sitting. So the designations that they currently sit at are music, literature, film, media arts, craft and folk arts, gastronomy, and one other. It's a very interesting collection. Performing arts is not an art form in there. I noticed with our 75 cities of music, it varies between cities that have very traditional art forms, very traditional music forms, almost folk music, and to the point where you go, they might be better sitting in the craft and folk arts sort of section. To cities that are, I guess, more a little bit more sort of dynamic in the contemporary music sphere. So, yeah, it covers quite a gamut. With America, it's interesting because they, for a long time, America wasn't part of the United Nations. They dropped out, obviously, for a while. So, at the cusp of a few other North American cities joining the United Nations network or the Creative Cities Network, and then found that they didn't have a national commission to sponsor them. So therefore fell through. I will say, though, that the Creative Cities of Music network is not necessarily a list of cities that you would consider to be music cities straight off. So these are all cities that have identified music within themselves, that they've identified music or creative fields or creative arts as a way to lead urban sustainability and to improve their cities. And some cities take it differently. Some cities are very sort of take it to heart and very much driving, they already have a creative cities program or they have creative industries programs and they're looking to consolidate that. Others are trying to raise the profile of their cities, and that United Nations or the UNESCO badge helps them with that sort of marketing and branding.
I see.
So cities come out from different reasons. So when I think about North American cities, for instance, there are some very famous cities, you know, Nashville, Austin, Seattle spring to mind. New York and Los Angeles are obviously the motherships, but you'd argue that these cities don't need necessarily to be part of a Creative Cities network because they are already well established and well entrenched as music cities. They already have that international reputation as being international music cities. So for them, they might need to find another way. I mean, curiously, Austin is it's in the UNESCO network, but it's not as a city of music.
All right.
Toronto is the same. Toronto is a city of media arts, I think, which I think surprised a lot of people in the Toronto music industry. Yeah, so I mean, for
well,
us,
so I was just curious about that. I was curious about what made a music city, and that explained it pretty well. That these are not necessarily cities like New Orleans or New York City that already have a grinding music cultural economy. But you specifically mentioned that a place like Kansas City or Auckland might see music as part of their sustainable cultural music economic scene, even. Is that kind of one of the points?
So in Auckland, we have a very determined sort of creative industries policies going on, and it covers not just music but film and gaming as well. Sort of, I would say, are our three big industries. They're certainly the ones that generate jobs and revenue and GDP. So there's the focus, and it's hard to describe from different cities because every city is different. There is no one fits all model, but Auckland is a relatively small city. It's 1.7 million people live here. I say relatively small. It's the biggest city in New Zealand,
right,
by a long shot. 40% of the entire country live in Auckland, but you can compare that to, say, cities in America, so different scales. So for us, it's very easy to communicate with an entire music sector in one go. Like, it's very easy for us to, you know, go around the room and get the mood of what the music sector needs and to respond to it. So it makes us, you know, we're a little bit more like an indie record label compared to, say, American major labels. We're a little bit more nimble. We can react faster.
Very nice, very nice. And comparatively, Auckland is about the same population as Phoenix, Arizona, which is the fifth largest city in the States, and approximately the same size as Montreal in Canada and Stockholm in Sweden, just so people have a point of reference.
The Creative Cities Network gives us a global network that we can access. And it's almost like what you want to do with that network is up to us. We've got 75 cities in there. I act as a communications coordinator. My friend in Kansas City, Jake Wagner, is the deputy coordinator for the 75 music cities. And our colleague, Sandra, who is in Norrköping in Sweden, is the current coordinator. And there's a sort of 2-year rollover. So we change coordinators, deputy coordinators every 2 years. We just find, you know, the challenge with the 75 cities is just to keep us all talking, and that's the benefit of it. So there are other global networks of cities that exist, you know. I'd argue, you know, there's your network, for instance. You know, people can jump on your online platform and
right.
use that. There is Momentuals, the Music Cities events team, and what they do in the Center for Music Ecosystems. And there is a few global networks. So it's not and it's not exclusive. Like, as Auckland, I could be part of. I engage quite a lot with Music City events on what they do, for instance. But I obviously communicate a lot with my UNESCO cities as well. So it just gives us a platform for dialogue, for communication, and to find those avenues. It gives us that ability to go, hey, I'm doing something here in Auckland. I need to find somewhere for my artists to go overseas. They're looking for, you know, how to extend what they're doing to different cities. And I'm like, well, if you're going to America, I know this guy in Kansas City. So you're going to Adelaide, I know that. But we also sort of sit there and talk about projects that we can do together. And we have this overarching umbrella about how do these fit into what are called the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And can they bolster those aims? So United Nations has 17
I think I saw
sustainable.
those in your strategic plan for 2023. They're all listed out there, either there or on your website. It's again, it's so expansive, and there are a lot of goals, a lot to tackle. One of the other things too, I saw, it seems like during in your network, you're able to kind of share programmatic approaches and ideas. And one of the things I saw that is comes out of UNESCO Music Cities is the EQ program. Auckland has adopted that as also another program called Songlines. Tell us about those two projects.
Equalizer actually is a EQ for short. It's important that we found a punning music title for the program.
Of course.
That was born out of an idea between myself and a few of the other cities, and we were meeting in Italy a few years ago, and we were discussing those sustainable development goals that I mentioned. And one of the big ones is gender equality. So sustainable goal officially SDG number 5 is gender equality. There are a lot of SDGs. There are a lot of goals to go at. It is very expensive. It is very overwhelming, and there is no way that city or person could conceivably, cover all those bases. So, what we're looking at is, and this is kind of like how I approach life in general, is like, what can I influence? What can I control? What are the things? What are the levers that I can push and pull to make a difference? And gender equality was one that we could all kind of meet on and decide that there's something we could do something about. And so Equalizer was born. And it's an interesting project. So it's what I call an open source project, in that our aim is to provide gender equality in the music sector. How we do that on a city by city basis is up to us. So in Adelaide, for instance, they did an EQ project where they had a songwriting camp. For a week, they brought in young women. They all collaborated. They devised a song together. They recorded that song. They made a video for it. And so it worked very much like girls' rock camp. In New Zealand, we took a different approach. And Sweden took a different approach. And Hanover in Germany took a different approach. But we all put it under the EQ banner. So the end result was still the same. The end result still had more opportunities for women in the music sector. But we just approached it in ways that we could, because we all have funding availability, but that funding always comes with a lot of,
Strings.
it comes with a lot of strings attached. So
Well, I'm saying,
how you can make a project.
but demonstrating that this is a need, this is a priority, that there needs to be more equality among the voice coming out of the music community that seems to be more male dominated, and so let's do something that at least pushes women forward, and those who identify as women, I noted in some of the documentation, push that community forward in the music community. And then you're able to do that in a variety of different ways. What does Songlines do? Tell us about that one.
Songlines was is more of a heritage project. So that one was probably less about UN SDGs and more about how we look at protecting the heritage or promoting the heritage or celebrating the heritage of our community. The reasonably simple idea, which is to place lyrics in the sidewalks. And so we did it as part of a regeneration program in a town centre in the north of Auckland. So it just fortuitously it was undergoing this town centre regeneration, and it gave them an opportunity to go, hey, we've got an ability to do this because the whole town centre is getting ripped up. So let's make use of that. Council had budget available, and it was really a matter of curating a whole bunch of lyrics of artists from that specific area. In my
Nice.
dream scenario, I would have this happening in every borough, but it spoke to us from that area, and it started off with, the first lyric was from about 1980, 81, and it led through all these artists. They were very famous artists, and they were very famous lyrics, and then it finished with now trying to remember 2020, I went to this project 2021, but the very last two lyrics were from two young women who had won a songwriting competition. They were high school students and had won songwriting competitions, and we included their lyrics as well. So there's this other word in Maori. It's called whakapapa, and it means roughly genealogy. It's a is literally a song line going from these legacy artists all the way through to these very current artists, these very fresh artists. So artists you don't know, lyrics you don't know, going all the way back to these artists that are very famous and lyrics that everyone knows as part of their culture. It's the standing on the shoulders of giants sort of
Sure, right.
feel. But yeah, that speaks to our cultural heritage. It speaks to how each generation gave us new gifts in lyrics and music, and how that this new generation are carrying that torch forward. And each song was implanted onto the pavement so people could take this sort of heritage walk. Went from the town centre all the way down to the local beach. There was the sample lyrics. There was a QR code that took them to a Spotify playlist that had all these songs on, so they could list it. And then we mounted an exhibition within the town centre itself with posters with information on each artist. So it gives an opportunity to both celebrate those artists and to inform and educate the public on exactly who, if they weren't familiar with the artist, then this is why they are in this exhibition.
Well, in your 2023 strategic plan, you provide a very impressive snapshot, I think, of your city's music ecosystem. Tell us a little bit about the presence of songwriters and musicians and recording studios and live music venues and more in Auckland. So we have a better sense of that. And you're saying again that there's this feel that you could pick up the phone and call any of them because almost a small town feel, even though it's not a small town really. But tell us
it,
about that.
it
Yeah.
is funny. It has got that duality of we're a big city, but and I do take the point that I've been in the industry a long time, so most people will pick up my call, and I know a lot of people. But it is that, to give you an example, that strategy was developed as part of a workshop that we did at a studio called Roundhead Studios in the central city. And Roundhead Studios is this state-of-the-art, beautiful, bespoke, built from the ground up studio that is owned by Neil Finn. If you're familiar with Neil Finn from Crowded House, and he's played quite recently with Fleetwood Mac. And he built the studio in the central city, and it almost has become a de facto home for the music industry. So we do a lot of seminars and conferences in the main studio. And to inspire my workshop there, I asked Neil to come and talk to us. So Neil lives upstairs, and he came down and had a chat to us. And I had all these council people who were just like sitting there, mouths wide open, Neil Finn
Nice.
trying to inspire them why we need a music sector. And that's that small town feel, I guess, that Neil, who is an international touring artist and has been for the best part of 4 decades, is able to, will just generously give his time to do that. And the same feel goes for, say, Lord, who comes from the
Oh, yes.
north
Hello.
of Auckland.
Right.
So
My mouth would be dropped open, I think.
yeah, she lives locally. It's not a problem. So just down the road from people like Taika Waititi,
So, but there is this dynamic music community. It is not only reflective of the legacy artists of New Zealand, but also the newer, younger artists. And as the demographic shifts are happening in New Zealand, more people are moving to New Zealand, more cultures are being represented. How are you able to kind of throw your arms around the new voices that are surfacing?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, when I talk about the City of Music office and what we do and what the point of it all is, I quite often talk about the policy work that needs to be done and the need for, robust ecosystems and so forth. What I never talk about, or what I try to push away from, is content creation, because I am up to my neck in amazing creators. So that talent pipeline has never been a problem. And to speak to your point, I think, I've seen it evolve from being a very much I guess a sort of pop rock kind of attitude in the 70s and 80s, to a very diverse offering. So we have a lot of immigrants coming from, I mean, all parts of the world. And I think we have something like 220 ethnicities in Auckland. We're something like the second or third most diverse city in the world for population. And it's a real melting pot, and it's amazing. 25% of or more, I think, is of our population is Asian, identifies as Asian. So there are these incredible influences. And I, you know, the other on top of that, we have our Indigenous, our First Nations music, which is extremely powerful and unique to us, which is an interesting place to be at. You know, that I think that's another area where Indigenous is not as celebrated as it should be, and that if I'm creative, if I'm a European person creating European art forms, I'm selling Coles Newcastle. Maori artists and Polynesian artists are creating something quite unique. They're singing in languages that are theirs, that no one else can speak or can verbalize. And quite often can introduce instruments as well that are unique to this place. It creates something new and unique, and that's our, I guess, you know, to use the commercial parlance, it's our USP, right? So, and the other thing about, I just briefly touch on about melting pots, is that we have the largest Polynesian population in the world. So we're the biggest city that is closest to the Pacific Islands. So our Pacific Islands, like Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Cook Islands, we get all the diaspora from those islands, and they end up in Auckland, and that creates a whole nother layer of amazingness.
I'm speaking with Mark Roach. He's the director of the Auckland's City of Music. It's a UNESCO program in New Zealand. You can learn a lot more about the program by going to his website, aucklandcityofmusic.nz for New Zealand, of course. They also have a Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter presence. They're on LinkedIn. You can also download your 2023 strategy from your website. I'm also going to park it on mine so I can continue to point people toward it. We live in a time where people fail to look beyond their own personal experience and embrace the legacy that was there before them. You, even though you probably have a musical background yourself that wound up placing you in this path, you have been able to reach back as well as look forward. What would be your advice to anybody else, any other music advocate in the world, on the importance of respecting and advancing the historic music of a place and its people? What would you tell them?
So I'm going to rely a little bit on some te reo Māori again. As a phrase that I love, it's whakarongo mai. It pretty much means shut up and listen. And I think that's a really important trait to learn, especially if you're an advocate or working in music administration in any shape or form, is to actually listen to those heritage artists, listen to everyone from the past. Everyone has experience, and what I've found, especially dealing with heritage artists and legacy artists, is that people don't care so much about awards and trophies and titles. What they care about is the acknowledgement that to be heard is the most important thing. And I think that's something I've learned in my dealings with First Nation artists as well, is there's a lot of historical grievances out there, rightly so. And there's a lot of bad mojo that goes with colonization, right? It's whether we ever get to a place where that's, I don't think that will, you know, it's a it, that that's deep trauma, deep generational trauma. And but in the process of reparation, what you can do is listen and acknowledge that the trauma and the problems and the issues. You don't have to fix them all, is you know, but it's just important that you listen and find consensus. And if people feel like they're being heard, then you'll find a way forward. You know, that strength will come. And I think this is, you know, again, I'm overgeneralizing here, but there is always a thing with councils, with municipalities, with any political sphere, is to be dictatorial, and they don't mean to be, but there is a thing where they think they're doing the right thing and buttons pushed and those voices haven't been really listened to. And, you know, we find it a lot in the music industry. I think that music industry is like square pegs in round holes. People try to think they're doing the best thing for a music economy. And musicians and those of us who work in the music economy just go, but how, that it's ridiculous. That doesn't serve purpose at all. And it comes back to an earlier point that I made about municipalities don't understand the music sector. The music sector doesn't understand municipalities. So I think, you know, for me, I sit as a music office in between. I'm the translator and I sit there being a conduit for both sides and trying to find that common ground where we can all thrive together.
In your city's nighttime economy, do you respect and listen to your area's first artists, first musicians, first storytellers, first communities, and first creators of culture? Could you? This has been Season 3, Episode 1 of Nighttime Economy, the 24-Hour Nation podcast. Visit our website at 24hournation.com and follow us on social media to discover more about the people, programs, and possibilities for your city at night. My name is Randall White.